afternoon, Milwaukee. This is the Mark Belling Late Afternoon Show on News Talk 1130 WISN. There are a couple of breaking news stories developing. The first one national, the second one local. Let me touch on them briefly. Then we'll get into today's program and I'll give you the first of our four words to give out today in the Cold Hard Cash Contest. First of all, the local story. There are reports, and we don't have a lot of information, but apparently an off-duty Milwaukee police officer was shot sometime today near Water and Buffalo, which is right in the heart of the Third Ward, just south of downtown Milwaukee. There are no other details that I can confirm for you at this point. There is a website, Wisconsin Right Now, that has reported that there is some indication that the officer was intervening trying to stop a carjacking. But again, that is not confirmed. No one else is reporting that, and no one else has issued any statement from any authority that that is what happened. On the other hand, when I heard the report just a little bit ago that there was the shooting of an off-duty police officer daytime down there, my first initial reaction was exactly that. It's some sort of a carjacking. Maybe the officer was the individual who was being carjacked, or maybe he stepped in to try to stop it. And the reason that was my first reaction is car thefts and carjackings are occurring at a level that not only have we never seen before, it's almost unimaginable. It's not just in Milwaukee, as you know. We had a car theft occur 2 days ago at 4:15 in the morning in the town of Oconomowoc, which led to a high-speed chase through Waukesha County on I-94. Somebody's warming up their car in their driveway at 4:15 in the morning. Don't lock the car in. Two 15-year-olds from Milwaukee hop in the car and take off and steal it. What they were doing out there at Oconomowoc at 4:15 in the morning, we don't know, but it's an indication that this problem is occurring literally everywhere. There was a murder in Milwaukee right around 2:25 this morning on Farwell and Albion. A 57-year-old woman was killed. Two are in custody. We don't have any details on that either. Perhaps that had something to do with an automobile. Perhaps it didn't. I don't know. What I can tell you is that this problem is at staggering levels, and it is certainly spreading beyond the city limits, but it is especially extreme within the city limits. Now, again, I stress, we don't know for certain that that has anything to do with what happened with the off-duty Milwaukee police officer who was shot today. A couple of other quick comments on that. Generally, officers that are off-duty are the same as the rest of us. They're going about their lives doing things, so forth and so on. Probably the officer would not have been wearing a vest if they were off duty at the time. Now, off duty, is this an officer that was driving home from work, or is it an officer that, you know, doesn't even work today and is just going about their personal, who knows? Who knows the answer to that? But again, this violence problem that's occurring, which is not just in southeastern Wisconsin, the southeastern Wisconsin component to it is being driven by auto theft, stolen cars, and so on. It's just such an enormous portion of it, but obviously the problem is going on across the country. What you have seen in Milwaukee is literally no response of note from anyone in a position of power about it. Milwaukee's acting mayor, Chevy Johnson, put out another statement on crime yesterday. It is laughably nonspecific. But I'll give him credit. Other than Bob Donovan, at least he puts out something. Milwaukee has a sheriff that's running for mayor, and the sheriff doesn't seem to know that he's involved in law enforcement since he never says a damn thing about it. You have a couple of other liberals running who apparently are just pleased with this because they were the ones that led the push to defund the police so we don't have any cops in the street, thus empowering people to carjack cars, steal cars, joyride cars, run away from police in cars because they know there aren't enough police officers to stop them. People are often under the impression that problems go away if you just wait them out. There may be some problems like that. For instance, if you've got arthritis, heart problems, they will go away. You'll die, but that's the way they go away. Otherwise, you got all of those problems. They're going to get worse unless you do something about it. True of just about everything in life. So imagine you're strung out on opioids. You're not just going to magically get over your addiction. It's going to take remarkable proactive activity to get over it. The problem that occurs when we have a problem that is created by liberal public policy is the liberals don't like to do anything to stop it because it means that they have to acknowledge that they were the ones that were responsible for it. Furthermore, they generally don't believe in the things that you have to do to stop the problem. It's one of the reasons that I am pessimistic that the inflation problem we're seeing in the United States is going to end. Inflation's not going to end on its own. As I say, problems don't end on their own. I admit there are some things in life economically that are cyclical. We have a business cycle in this country. There are ups and downs, and after something goes down long enough, it tends to come back and go up again. But public policy can impact how low the lows are, how high the highs are, and how long the highs last, and how long the lows last. But other than that kind of thing, where there are issues that are cyclical and so on, some of these situations with regard to crime, where we essentially have told police officers not to be proactive, we have told police officers you better not shoot an African-American suspect, because if you do, you're going to have all sorts of people immediately call you a murderer, even if the African-American suspect is someone who is doing something wrong. We then turn around and defund the police. We have criminal justice systems with progressive DAs all across America who are releasing everybody on bail and not even charging many violent crimes. And all over America, and especially here in Wisconsin, we have a juvenile justice system that's a joke. One that we can't even watchdog on because, by its very nature, it's secret. There was that case that I mentioned just a few moments ago of the automobile theft in Oconomowoc, where 4:15 in the morning, car stolen by two guys. Guys warming up his car. I said, guy, it might have been a woman. Don't know. Warming up their car. They go back into the house. Car is stolen. The two people who were apprehended are both 15 years old, and they're both from Milwaukee because they're 15 years old. I have no ability to track their movement through the court system at all. Unless they are charged as adults, we don't know. Suffice to say that the Waukesha County juvenile system is about as lenient as the Milwaukee County juvenile system is. They tend not to do anything about these things, which is why there are so many young people out there able to commit these crimes, because we're not locking them up. If we were locking them up, the crime would go down because they'd be locked up and couldn't commit more crime. Instead, these are people that are doing these same crimes over and over and over again, knowing full well that if they are juveniles, we do nothing about that, about it. And as I say, the problem is getting worse. For people who magically think that this is going to go away, things don't magically go away. Magic's kind of an amazing thing. I'm open to all sorts of supernatural possibilities. I'm open to them. That doesn't mean I believe in them. Obviously, I believe in God, and I believe that our world and our universe was created. That is something that is beyond nature of man, so I believe in higher powers. I just don't think that there are all sorts of other people who have those higher powers, but I do believe that miracles can be performed, which is separate from the issue of magic. But I mean, magic is something that's lost its luster in our society. You may be wondering why I'm yapping about magic now. I have a purpose in this. Before I yap about magic, though, let's share this. Cold Hard Cash Contest. 3 o'clock hour work. You ever go to a magic show in your life? Well, that was a long answer. You had to think about that? Why? Was that one of my cruises? Oh, there was like one of the guy entertainers is a magician? Yeah, that's... Yeah, the... magicians, Vegas, and cruise ships. That's about the only place that they really are big deals. Amazing. If you're a magician, if you're a really good magician in Vegas, you can make tens of millions of dollars. You try to perform anywhere else, nobody goes to see you. It's extraordinary. I mean, there was a time that Vegas had like five headline magicians. They play the showrooms of 3,000-4,000. Lance Burton, Siegfried and Roy were kind of magicians. David Copperfield was another guy that was really good. Can't think of his name. Anyway. Nationwide keyword for this hour is green. G-R-E-E-N. Green. Admit it, you're happy the Packers have a bye this weekend, aren't you? Why are you happy about it? Yeah, well, yeah, it's supposed to buys you a free victory. I look at it the opposite way, but it means the same thing. They can't get knocked out this weekend. It means the same thing. The team that wins the Super Bowl is the team that makes the postseason and doesn't lose any games. That's what it is. You could say it's the team that makes the postseason and wins all of their games, but really, I think in sports, in knockout competition like this, it's a battle of survival, Ed. There's 14 teams in the NFL postseason. Six are going to be knocked out this weekend, and the Packers won't be one of them. We will have to resume our worry warning next week, but this is a week I don't have to worry about. Now, the downside, of course, is for Packer fans, there is no game that you would watch with the anticipation that you would watch a Packer game, but... Let's face it, In these postseason games, you watch these games more with dread than anticipation, don't you? You mostly are worried that they're going to lose rather than excited to see if they're going to win. Isn't that the way you kind of approach it? I mean, there are times that everybody thinks they're going to win, and that's when they really crush. What was the most disappointing postseason defeat of your lifetime, would you say? Also, the 4th and 26th game involving the... See, I don't know about that. I don't know about that. I know. Do you think they were going to win the Super Bowl that year? Maybe they would have. They were. It was another year in which they were. They might have been the favorite or close to be the favorite. To me, the most disappointing was the. It was the game in Seattle because I was convinced the Packers are the best team in the NFL that year. Now, I could say last year the game against Tampa because, again, I thought, as you may recall, I predicted that the Packers, I'm not saying they're better than 50-50. I thought they were the likeliest team to win the Super Bowl last year. Interestingly, I thought most people would come up with the answer of the Super Bowl that the Packers lost when they were double-digit favorites to the Denver Broncos. That would have been the 98 Super Bowl, the one after the 97 season, but rarely do people bring that up. Maybe it's just a function of time, but that was deeply disappointing because I think almost everybody who watched that game assumed the Packers were going to win. Not only were they overwhelming favorites, that was when the NFC had like a 10, 11, or 12-year run where they had won the Super Bowl each year. It doesn't make my list. You may recall that was the year in which I said that I thought the Packers were going to lose that game. I didn't like anything about the way the Packers went into that game, and unfortunately, I was right about that. Plus, I have a general opinion that in sports, if you just predict that whoever won last year isn't going to repeat, you will almost always be right in American sports. You'll be wrong a few times, but repeating is brutally difficult. It's harder than you think because, obviously, if you won last year, you start the next season probably as really, really good. Despite that, it's just hard to repeat in sports. Used to be easier. Harder now. Let me finish the word. Green, G-R-E-E-N. You have until 3:55 to go to newstalk1130.com and enter the word green. Go to the contest for this hour. So you've been to one magic show in your life. Just one? Well, like little... I don't know. Yeah, I guess I don't know if that counts. I mean, it depends. If it was somebody doing it in your classroom, no. But if your parents took you to a theater or something, then yes. You two, a few more. I don't know. I don't believe I ever saw a magic show other than in Las Vegas. I've seen people do magic tricks. That's different. You know, I used to be able to do a couple of tricks that would flubox people. My favorite trick was I could break a pencil with a dollar bill. I had people fooled on that one forever and ever and ever and ever. You know what? I stopped doing those doing tricks when I got into the media. No, it was after I was in the media. Somebody called me. Obviously it was a trick. I never claimed I was a magician. If somebody figured it out, what do I care? No. It's when I stopped pursuing women. guys that are out there that are trying to impress women, you got to come up with something interesting out there. I think, you know, doing a magic trick, if you're talking to a woman that you're just meeting at a bar, that's not the... You know, you got their attention for at least 5 or 10 minutes. You do the magic trick and you can let them be impressed with the incredible wit and charm that you have in there as well. Now, I had a good one where I'd bust a pencil with a dollar bill. Well, I did. Card tricks were always hard for me because I have these big fat fingers and thumbs. Anything with the dexterity. Now, the ones where you'd set the deck, anybody can do that. I mean, where you prepare the deck and certain cards are in a certain place. But, I mean, the ones where they're dealing off the bottom of the deck and all, I can't do that. I mean, way too clumsy for that. Yeah, those guys that do it, some of them are good, but that's the reason they have to do it on the street, because there's only three of them that are in the big showrooms. Anybody else, there's no like middle level for magicians. You're either a superstar player in the showroom in Vegas, or you're doing it on the street hoping somebody gives you a buck. There's no place in between where 120 people come in and they charge $10 to see it. That middle doesn't exist in the market. Well, that's kind of true, isn't it? All right. With regard to this point, with regard to magic, this is an extremely elongated point. when someone does a magic trick, some of them say that they have supernatural powers. Uri Geller used to claim that, and that he actually claimed he was bending spoons, and oh, just a load of crap. He wasn't bending spoons with his mind. He was bending spoons with his hand. It was a trick. It was an illusion. It wasn't anything that was done with any type of supernatural power. The point that I make is, I do believe that it is possible that God can work through man and do things supernaturally. I believe that, and I think most religious people have that belief. We just don't think it happens all that often, and we don't think that, and we think that a lot of the people who claim these powers are talking out of their keister. The same is true with regard to public policy. Everything that is happening because something else happened. You can go into basic laws of physics. COVID, for example, didn't just happen. There's been a remarkable lack of interest from the media and the left in finding out how COVID happened, but it happened because of certain things. I think overwhelmingly likely, and we now have, thanks to the Project Veritas report, we now have paperwork that shows that in 2018, Echo Health Alliance, that's the organization in the United States, had put in an application to do gain-of-function research and fund it through laboratories in China, and this was being approved at the highest levels of the government of the United States, and so on. So we know that this research had been authorized, and they were going into, we also know that they knew that it was highly risky. I think the overwhelming likelihood is that this experiment was being done with a bat virus in a lab in Wuhan, and the virus got out of the lab, either deliberately or by accident, one of the two. That's why COVID happened. There was a reason for it. Now, I know that some of you think that this is, well, no kidding, everything happens for a reason. Well, this point's more important than you think. If we have a problem that's occurring in our country, it's because something else or something, a series of something else's happened. You can't keep letting liberals do stupid things and not expect terrible consequences. There are many people who are ambivalent to the notion of what we ought to be doing with public policy. They just shut their brains down. I think they're people who probably, if they actually thought things through, would be conservative, but they have been dominated by liberalism their entire lives. So they hear some of these things. It doesn't make a lot of sense to them, but they kind of shrug their shoulders and figure one side says this, the other side says that, and neither of them really know what they're talking about. They're all just guessing. Understanding life is not that hard. Now, I just used an example, didn't I? COVID. COVID didn't just happen. COVID happened for a reason. And again, we don't have proof of the reason, but I think that the overwhelming likelihood, and I say overwhelming, is that it got out of the lab in Wuhan. Overwhelming, as I would say, higher than 98%, 98 to 99%. And again, deliberately or not, don't know. But overwhelming likelihood that it got out of the lab. If you simply take every problem that we have and go back and, without bias, figure out why it happened, you'll learn something. And gradually you'll start developing an ideology when you notice that when you do certain things, they lead to problems, you're not going to be in favor of doing those things anymore. Likewise, when you see something good happen, again, that happens for a reason. The laws of physics are real. You could go back to our human existence, and I've had this idea that I need to be taken on this whole notion that science is a liberal thing, which a lot of lefties have been pushing here. And they start with the notion that science and religion are opposite things. I contend science and religion are not opposite, and it's very hard to be religious if you don't believe in the laws of science. But going back to that, the people who believe that there was no God or no creator, the flaw in their thinking, of course, is, well, how did all of this get here? Something just happened, and they're claiming that it happened for no reason, that there was a bang or there was an explosion of matter or something or another occurred. That's not a satisfactory explanation for me, because I believe that every single thing that happens occurs because of something else. Why am I here? I'm here because my mother and father met. They got married. They, you know, did it. She got pregnant and had me. There's none of us that are here just because of something that didn't happen. For you to be here with your personality and your mindset and your appearance and your brain and your outlook and your observation and your physical body, it required two unique human beings to meet one another, have sex, and the female to have a baby. You could go back to the beginning of time, and we could argue forever about who God is and which religion has the right notion of God, and I suppose you can even argue whether or not there is still a God, but it's never been satisfactory to me to simply claim that we just got here and that there was no entity, no spiritual entity, no being of some sort that had anything to do with that, and I will take that right down to right now. Now, I'm driving at something, as you might guess. Driving at a lot of things. You can even talk about the carjacking problem and so on. Carjacking, car theft, violence pertaining to this theft and so on, of automobiles running from the police. This problem's been around for some time, but undeniably it is way worse now than it was 7 years ago. Way worse. And any cop in any jurisdiction would tell you that. Not just Milwaukee, not just Waukesha. Well, you have a son-in-law as a cop. He has to deal with this. I'm sure he's been involved in pursuits even if they don't start in his own community. It's probably... other than, you know, traffic enforcement or just patrol, it's probably the number one thing that most police officers are dealing with right now. Other than, like, you know, just the routine things that you would be doing if you didn't have an actual call. It's just a constant thing that's going on. And it's not just even in the urban areas. I mean, it's not at the same level, say, in central Wisconsin, but it's happening there as well. It's happening for a reason. COVID's happening for a reason. Inflation's happening for a reason. The shortage of workers that we have is happening for a reason. These things, and if they're bad things, they're all happening because something else happened. And generally, that something else happened because something before that happened. On yesterday's program, I did something, and I hope it was fully understood. You think people understand why I went through that... thing with regard to 2022. Did I properly explain that I'm encouraging you to try to figure things out? Because we have opinion leaders, we have a media anymore that don't want you to figure anything out. They want to tell you what it is, and they're generally wrong. If you think things through, you'll realize, if you think things through and you take your biases out of that thinking things through, you're going to figure out a lot of things that you would not have otherwise figured out, and you would find out that many of the things that you're being told are wrong. And that's why I stress this, and I went through this little thing, which was halfway funny, for the purposes of leaving people with this lesson and having them work through that. I try to do stuff like this. I'm not going to repeat the entire thing as to what it was yesterday, but that's why I did it. You know what the funny thing is? These people who listen to the podcast, you want to come up with somebody that's just a frustrated person? How'd you like to be somebody who's listening to the podcast and then email me in when they think they know what the answer is? Why would I have any way of knowing that they didn't just wait for me to tell the answer and then send the say, that's the downside of listening to the show 7 hours after it's done live. Everybody else will have already known the answer. It is almost impossible to honestly figure out why something happened without bias and still be a liberal. Because almost everything that liberals believe in leads to problems. Almost everything. In fact, I might even, if I thought it through long enough, I might say literally everything they believe in leads to problems. The only difference is some problems are obviously more grave, some are worse than others. But everything that they believe in leads to problems. The stuff that they believe in doesn't work. As I've explained forever, they don't care what works and what doesn't work. They simply want to do what they like to do. They want to do what they perhaps wish it would work, but they want to do what they want to do. They want to pay people to not work. They clearly took advantage of COVID to do that. They want to give people lots and lots and lots of money to not work. That's what they want to do. Now, the end result of this is many people, therefore, don't work. We have massive shortages of all sorts of products. The economy is breaking down and ceasing to function. And you have people that are developing all sorts of other problems that occur when they are turned idle because they're living off of a check that they're being given for doing nothing. All of those are problems that occurred because of that initial problem that was out there, but that doesn't affect the fact that liberals wanted to do it. They don't think through whether or not something works or not. It isn't really the thing that trips their trigger. So here's the thing that ultimately happens. And I think you're seeing it right now with regard to crime. You may be seeing it right now with inflation, and you're certainly seeing it with COVID. There's one major problem that liberals have in swaying people around to their point of view. One major problem. And that is, they are always proven wrong. The facts come out and they're wrong. Now, sometimes that can take decades. In other cases, they're so wrong that it's almost instantaneous. I've got some things to share with the audience today, but one of the examples of where they have clearly been wrong is COVID. As you know, I like to share often the columns written by Dan Henninger in the Wall Street Journal. His column today is essentially about how almost all Americans are now simply ignoring so-called experts with regard to COVID because we realize they're full of crap. There isn't a single one of them that anybody can find who about 2 years ago when COVID was all starting saying, if you do everything that we tell you to do, COVID's going to be worse than ever 2 years from now. There isn't any of them who thought that. None of them. Biden, again, shot off his mouth today and said that this is a pandemic of the unvaccinated. Omicron is clearly not a pandemic of the unvaccinated. And people know that. The reason they know that is, I swear, is there anybody in America who doesn't right now know at least one person who has the Omicron variant of COVID? Seriously. I mean, no, but I'm saying that that maybe way out in remote areas where it hasn't yet gotten. I mean, maybe if you lived in northern Wyoming in a small town of 80 people, maybe you wouldn't know somebody because it just hasn't worked its way out over there. Yeah, but other than that, I would think that, I would guess almost everybody listening to me right now knows somebody who has it or knows somebody that they think has. Of course, many people are so non-sick they're not getting tested, but you suspect that they may have had it. So if almost everybody has it in a country in which 70% has been vaccinated, it's preposterous to say it's a pandemic of the unvaccinated. So people know that what Joe Biden is saying here isn't true. They're tuning him out. This is the problem that liberals have. They can state things with such certainty, and even though they have a history of being wrong always, it's amazing that despite being, it'd be like somebody who actually would have thought that last week your football pick was going to win. It might win because occasionally you have to get something right, but there was no particular reason to think that you had a better than 50-50 chance when you were going into the week 3 and 15. I'm telling you, liberals will listen to a liberal who's 0-97 and think that 98 is going to be right. The problem, of course, is that eventually time goes along, the results come in, and they are proven wrong again and again and again. What they are good at, which they have to be good at, is just moving on. They have to be good at moving on. Otherwise, they'd have to stand up and say, you know, what we said was completely wrong. We made complete fools of ourselves. Everything we said was wrong. We told you to listen to Fauci. It turns out he's a lying crook. They can't do that. They instead just have to keep moving on. And they're very, very good at moving on because they have to be good at it. Otherwise, they'd be discredited and nobody would ever listen to them. Let me use an example. You know, I don't know which day of the week it was. I was joking with Paul back and forth. What's the one thing in life you don't want to be wrong about? Well, do you even remember that we went through that? You've already forgotten what it was, even though it took you forever to figure it out last time, and now you've forgotten what it was. It was this week. He's claiming it's his COVID fog. He's going to blame this for, I've been milking a stroke for 3 years in here. So you could, I need to get one of those antibody tests to see if I had COVID because you're turning this COVID thing. Well, it actually is a positive when you think about it. I mean, nobody knows how much natural immunity you're going to get from it, but obviously you're going to get some. I mean, thing that nobody wants to say with regard to COVID. I think that the best thing that can happen to someone is to get it and survive, right? I mean, it's got to help you. I don't mean get it in that and infect 97 other people and develop long COVID with a thing, but if there is any type of immunity that one gets, and I certainly think that there is, I mean, you don't want to have it while you're having it, but once you're through it, you're better off than some poor slob that hasn't gotten it yet, right? You're claiming, however, that this is residually hanging around in your head. He also claims, however, that this is helping his football picks, that he needed to fog up his brain because the way his brain was working on football before was all wrong, so he got his football pick correct after he had COVID. Yeah, well, not that there is no God, but just what happens when, what, you don't want to be wrong about what happens at death. You know, I mean, what, as I said on the show, whatever day that was, you don't want to like die and there's Hare Krishna up there, or worse, there's Muhammad sitting on the throne, or, you know, just something that I haven't believed in, you know, the Onion, back when the Onion was still like the Onion, they did a famous headline right after 9/11. Remember the, you know, the Muslim terrorists, they have this belief that how many virgins do they think they're going to get when they die? 72. It's another thing I don't understand about Islam. That doesn't seem a lot if you're talking all eternity. I mean, 72? Well, what are you going to do 150,000 years from now? I mean, do they give you a new 72? Anyway, they believe that when they flew those buildings into the towers, when they flew the building that into the Pentagon, and when they flew the one that they were going to try to fly in, into the Capitol, they thought they would hit it and they would immediately see God and get all of the things. Anyway, the Onion did this thing that they were shocked to find out there they hit this thing and there Jesus was. There they went to hell. Oops, I guess we're wrong about this. Anyway. There are certain things that you don't want to be wrong about, and that would certainly be at the highest level of it. With regard to the public policy decisions that we have to make, these ideas aren't all created equally. I talk a lot about swing voters who go back and forth, and they tend to vote for candidates on the basis of whether or not they like them, which is close to the dumbest reason you can come up with voting for someone. The people, oh, I don't like Trump. How did this work out for you? How did that work out for you? I vote for people that I agree with and I think have the backbone to act on the things that I agree with them on. That to me is the most important thing. Public policy decisions matter. Not all approaches are created equally. Watering down the academics in the school by spending all of this time on culturalizing and teaching kids about global warming and teaching kids to accept all of these, you know, liberal fantasies out there rather than teaching them without bias how to read and write and giving them an accurate presentation on subjects like American history and science and so on. I contend that the approach that we're taking in the schools is making kids dumber. And I think that if you had a strong basics approach to education that didn't have ideology in it and took out all of these social issues and so on, that the kids would turn out smarter. There are two different approaches. And I think it's been pretty much tested. We see which approach works. The way they're running the schools right now is a disaster. Test scores go down every single year. By the way, I didn't mention this in yesterday's program. Let me get it in real quickly. DPI has, that's the Department of Public Instruction. It's the agency in the state of Wisconsin, it's one of the few, it's in fact about the only agency that has any responsibilities that is not controlled by the governor. We have a few others in which the appointees come from the governor and they are then independent, but even then, it starts with the governor. That's the importance of the governor. Department of Public Instruction has its own elected official. They run themselves. DPI compiles these report cards for each public school district in the state of Wisconsin. And they set a threshold or a barrier for whether or not you are meeting standards, exceeding standards. They have these different levels or below standards. What they did was they lowered the benchmark and they lowered the benchmark so that they could claim that MPS is meeting standards. If they had not lowered the benchmark from what it was last year, MPS would not have met standards. So they changed the benchmark. They literally lowered the scores. I mean, to just use an example that we can think of with regard to grading in school, imagine that a school said that 60% was the cutoff between failure and passing. Imagine if they lowered it to 48. So now somebody got a 52. Instead of saying that they're failing, we're saying that they're passing. They literally had to lower the benchmark for MPS rather than acknowledge that MPS is still not meeting standards. Anyway, we've tested these things. We know what works and we know what doesn't work. Yet there are many people who want to continue to pursue educational policies. Take a look at some of these school districts that we have out there. Look at some of the hacks that are involved, for example, in the Elmbrook District. Look at the mess they're making at Mequon. Look at the conscious decision they made in Wauwatosa to hire the ethically challenged Amon Means to be their school superintendent. All of these things are done for reasons that have nothing to do with academics and everything to do with socialization. And the end result is the quality of the education is going to go down. Now, it's going to take some time to prove that, but we've had enough time to prove it. The test scores are going down. You can look all around you. A lenient criminal justice system. You want to know when we started to see this tremendous increase in the number of juveniles involved in auto theft and carjacking? They're separate things. Theft is just taking a car. Carjacking is taking it from someone by force. Carjackings, obviously, are very, very dangerous. The auto theft is a problem, but it's generally not as deadly. However, it's often leading to high-speed chases, joyriding, and reckless driving. You want to know when this problem started to get worse? Paul said, when we didn't chase them. Well, we've resumed chasing in some instances now. I won't say you're wrong about that. But I said in particular juveniles. I think that's when the auto theft problem got worse. I mean specifically where clearly more than half of them right now are being done by people under the age of 18. Do you know when that started to occur? You could graph it out. When? When we stopped being good parents. Well, I don't know. I can't calculate exactly when that actually would have been. No, I'll tell you what it was. It was a public policy decision here in the state of Wisconsin. It was when all of the reports came out about the problems that were occurring at the state's only juvenile incarceration facility in northern Wisconsin. And we made a decision it's still not closed. We just don't send anywhere near as many people there. The vast majority of juvenile offenders are kept in their own communities, now under supervision, and they generally live at home. Occasionally, we put into like a group facility and so on. But once we stopped sending juvenile criminals to northern Wisconsin because we determined that it was an unsafe and violent institution, that's when the problem got worse. And again, without regard to what was going on, at Wisconsin's juvenile prison facility, they didn't call it a prison. That action resulted in something else. If you're not going to incarcerate hardened juvenile criminals, that means they're going to be out there and available to commit crime again and again and again and again and again. Furthermore, it took time, but the message has sunk in. You can be a juvenile criminal and nothing happens to you. What a surprise that there are more of them than ever. That's when it started. And again, you can go back at every single problem we have and find things that we did to make those problems worse, just as you can take something that's working or a problem that we have fixed. One of the reasons why I use analogies from the world of sports is sports provides a measurement. For example, you can argue, are Grafton schools doing well or not? Because what is well? It's hard to gauge that. You can't argue about who won or lost a sporting event. There's a score. A team has a record. We have statistics for everything. There's a firm level of measurement on something. You can determine when someone is doing well, when someone is doing poorly, someone is doing in between. You could tell when someone is improving. You could tell when someone is getting worse. There are those measurements. And in the case of sports, every single time a team has gotten better, there are reasons for it. And every single time a team has gotten worse, there are reasons for that. Well, sports isn't any different than anything else in life. If a football team is 4-4, let us see, I guess they got 17 games, 4-13, then they go 6-11, then they go 9-8, and the following year they go 13-4 and win the Super Bowl. There are going to have been a series of decisions of things that happened. Maybe they got good draft choices. Maybe they changed the coach. Maybe they stumbled onto a good quarterback. Go on and on. Whatever it is, you will be able to track it. And you can do the same thing with public policy decisions we make. And I am telling you that if you do it and you take your biases away from you, it is almost impossible to remain a liberal, because you will find that almost every single thing that liberals have had us do have backfired and created a worse result. And almost every single thing that we conservatives advocate for, when we have done them, better things have happened. A perfect example of this is New York City. I use it a lot because it's one of the few big cities we have that actually went and elected a Republican mayor for a while. There are very few of the big cities that flop back and forth between Democrat and Republican mayors. New York was half a hellhole. Told the stories forever about the first time I went to New York. I was in college. Then I went again right when I got out of college, and we went right into the heart of we went right into Times Square. I mean, you're 21 years old. How can you not want to go see Times Square, right? This is not the Times Square of today. This is the Times Square of the shooting gallery and the porno shops and just open cry. It was unbelievable. It's unbelievable. New York had a terrible rate of violent crime. The borough of the Bronx was one of the most unsafe places to be in the entire planet. Harlem, which is northern Manhattan, unbelievably unsafe. Tourism was down because tourists didn't want to come. And eventually things got so bad that, believe it or not, people of New York, very democratic city, elected a Republican mayor. They elected Giuliani. Giuliani changed crime policies. They brought in the police. First of all, they beefed up the police department and hired zillions of cops. And secondly, they told those cops, "We want you to be all over this city like a bad smell. You see somebody that's acting up, you see something that's a problem, get on their butts." The concept came to be known as broken windows policing. Anybody was doing anything wrong, the cop would be all over them. The idea was you take care of the small problems, the big ones take care of themselves. It worked. Amazing how it worked. New York City went from having a terrible crime rate to being, in terms of big cities, maybe the safest in the United States of America. The rate of murder per person, microscopically low. Parts of the city, I mean, in the middle of Manhattan, it's hard to imagine anywhere that was safer than there. Well lit, cops everywhere. There was crime, but nothing like in almost any other city in the United States. Times Square was cleaned up. Harlem developed a renaissance. Even the crime rate in the Bronx declined. But the end result of this is you had these pain in the butt cops that were all over the place, and occasionally the police were involved in behavior that was wrong. There was the Amador Diallo murder. It was indefensible. Bruce Springsteen did the song, what was it, 51 shots or whatever it was. There were cases of excessive force used by police. There were cases of individuals that maybe police were overreacting to. If police are looking into every problem, it means they're going to stumble onto some people who aren't causing a problem. They're not going to be right about it. And there's a backlash against it. They elected, you know, we went from Giuliani to Bloomberg, who pretty much kept in place most of the policing policies of Giuliani, backed off on it a little bit. Then you brought in de Blasio, who gutted the police department. Backed off on all of this stuff, was a clearly anti-police mayor. It's amazing how in just several years of de Blasio being the mayor, how quickly New York went to hell in terms of its crime problem. Again, those aren't magical things. Giuliani and then largely Bloomberg had a certain series of policies. De Blasio had a different one. We could see which ones worked and which ones didn't. No, nobody who runs Milwaukee is going to listen to me on this, but I could fix public education in Milwaukee. I could fix it. I can. It's actually maybe the easiest problem to fix in Milwaukee. You realize that Milwaukee has some of the greatest urban schools in America. They're private. It's truly spectacular. What's happening on the north side at St. Marcus Lutheran's incredible. Cristo Rey, Jesuit-run high school on the south side, astonishingly successful. What the Ramirez family has done with St. Augustine is incredible. I could rattle off a bunch of others. But we have managed in an urban environment in Milwaukee to have schools that are really good. And then you've got the train wreck of MPS. You don't have to be a genius. Let's get as many kids out of the rotten public schools as possible. Let's encourage the formation of private schools. Let's let the market decide. The private schools that will end up packed are the ones that are doing really, really well because parents, other than the ones who are completely apathetic, are going to want their kids to go to the schools that are good rather than be stuck in the schools that stink. There will still be some schools that stink, but given the fact that we have many outstanding private schools and many rotten public schools, I'd simply try to get as many private schools as we can and get as many kids out of MPS. Does it 100% solve the problem? No, but it makes education better. Like I say, some problems are hard. That one's simple. Look at MPS right now. Closed again. Teachers union doesn't want to go to school. No public official condemning them. I mean, even Lightfoot in Chicago is riding the butt of the Chicago public school teachers. When you have a public employee workforce and with regard to the teachers that are so apathetic about the quality of education that they caved in and sat out for a year and let these kids get even dumber. And then when virtually every public school in the state is still open right now, again, take a dive and close them up again. It shows you what the root of the problem is. And again, I'll just tell you. Each decision we make results in something happening. And if you want good things to happen, positive results to occur, generally you're going to have to do what we conservatives tell you to do. I know liberals don't want to hear because they don't want to do it. True of a lot of things in life. You see these guys that have five ex-wives? I actually don't know anybody that's up to five, but you know a few that have three, right? These guys with five ex-wives, child support to three or four different women and all of this stuff. Stop getting married! Find somebody you're going to live with for the rest of your life. And don't have any babies with somebody you're not married to. That solves the problem, right? If you're not going to have babies with somebody that you're not married to, and if you're not going to get divorced anymore, you're not going to have five ex-wives, but they want to keep running around with all of these. And I use the guy example. You could say the same thing with a woman who has children by six different fathers, married to none of them. Stop doing it. Simple, right? But they don't want to stop. That's the problem with most conservative solutions to problems. In the short term, it may mean that you can't do something that you want to do. As an example, using the example that I was referencing before. A lot of people like the fact that we gave people a ton of money for not working during COVID. Think that's a good idea anymore. Got to stop it. A lot of people don't want to stop it. But if you don't stop it, you're going to have all these problems. Get it? You get it? You understand this? So we understand your thing. In order for you to get a correct football pick, you need to get some sort of virus. Now, you think this COVID fog is going to stay with you for the rest of the season and you're going to continue to be correct. You need somebody who has COVID to sneeze all over you. You need to keep some of the virus festering around in you or something. Paul says, "What you think? Do you not think that COVID made you get that pick correct?" He does. See? No, I think it's something different. I think, as I said, I always ought to say it's 17 because it's everybody's 17th game. Week 18 of the NFL is impossible to figure out. I knew I'd be wrong. I was. So therefore, because it's impossible to figure out, you who haven't been able to figure out anything all year would therefore be correct. Were you right in week one? Because week one's the other impossible. I don't mean week one of our contest. It would have been week two of our contest, right? I think we started the first week of college. If you were right at week one and week 18, this explains everything. If you're right in the only 2 weeks where everybody else was wrong, do you look at it up? What are you doing in there? Hurry up. You were the two impossible. Now I have figured it out. The 2 weeks that you get goofball results that don't make any sense. But that result is one that was not aberrational. The 49ers turned out to be good and the Lions turned out to be bad. But if you go back and look at the scores of week one, lots of results that just made no sense. Just as in week 18, the biggest, I would say the biggest upset of the year in the NFL was the final week of the year, the Jaguars meeting Indianapolis, right? Not only in terms of point spread, but implication of the game. The other result, if you go through the entire year that makes no sense, is not the Packers losing to New Orleans, but losing by 38 points to the Saints. The Packers were, if not the best, close to the best team in the NFL. New Orleans, not very good. And they were crushed and annihilated by them. And again, week one and week 18 results. No, it's not love. News Talk 1130 WISN. Mark Belling, late afternoon show. There's a breaking story that I mentioned. We're going to be dealing with the national breaking story as well. The United States Supreme Court did block the Biden OSHA mandate, the vaccine mandate for large employers. They allowed to let stand the mandate for healthcare workers. And then locally, there was this incident that occurred earlier today near water in Buffalo and Milwaukee. An off-duty police officer has been shot. The following information comes from our own Dan O'Donnell. And again, I attribute it directly to Dan, so it's from WISN Radio here, but this is Dan's information, not mine. Law enforcement sources tell Dan the two people are in custody now. In connection with the shooting of an off-duty police officer, a third suspect is still on the loose. According to Dan, an off-duty officer was shot twice in the stomach by a carjacking suspect who opened fire on the officer as he tried to stop the carjacking in progress. The car has since been recovered in the 3000 block of North 30th Street. So that would be near 30th and Burleigh in that area. And the actual shooting occurred in the 3rd Ward near Water in Buffalo. Now, again, we don't have it. This is, again, from Dan O'Donnell. We don't have any other information than that, including the name of the officer and what condition the officer is in. One thing, though, jumps out at you. The officer's intervening to stop a carjacking. Why would the individual shoot the officer, potentially, if you would kill him? Not, that's a murder charge, as opposed to a carjacking charge, which... You can see how we're treating carjacking in our society right now. We're not doing anything to it. There's a very good reason to believe that this is somebody who might have had all sorts of other warrants out there for numerous crimes and would be facing significant time. Doesn't make much sense, for example, to shoot a police officer for something that if you're caught, very little is going to happen to you. Again, this is what happens when we turn everybody loose on bail for 2 or 3 or 4 years on all sorts of serious charges. And I keep pointing this out. And again, it fits everything I'm going to say on today's show fits into the same thing. Things happen because of other decisions we've made. When we have made the decision to allow the Milwaukee County court system to go on hold for 2 or 3 years because the judges don't want to come in because somebody might get COVID. And we've made the decision to release everybody on almost no bail. Low bail or no bail, signing their name, even when they're facing multiple felonies, you're going to have dangerous people on the street. The one way their bail is revoked is if they get caught doing something like carjacking during it. And if ultimately the charges that they're facing are 3, 5, 7, 9, 11 years in prison, imagine somebody that's facing 9 years in prison, but gets to be on the street for 2 years. These are time bombs. And again, those time bombs are all out there because we made these decisions for low bail. We made the decision to allow COVID to be a greater problem than properly moving cases to the criminal justice system. I think moving cases to the criminal justice system, knowing that a few people are going to get COVID by having to come into the courtroom, is a trade-off that would be worth it because of the kind of mayhem and damage created by criminals who stay on the loose. But instead, we over-prioritize COVID and accomplish nothing as a result. shut down the courts, didn't do this, that, or the other thing, and here we are 2 years later, more people have COVID than ever. They work. Again, each thing we talk about. If there's a problem, it's going to be because of decisions that were made. And in every single case that you find that problem, they were decisions that were made by liberals. Or conservatives who didn't fight back and oppose what liberals wanted to do. Let's give you the 4 o'clock hour word cold hard cash contest. See if we can't do $1,000 right here. The nationwide keyword in the cold hard cash contest is happy, H-A-P-P-Y, happy. Who did the song Happy? Paul? He's thinking. Oh, not happy. No, just happy. Say now, you're thinking, his COVID fog again in here. Why would the COVID fog make you smarter only in the area of football picks, but not help you in anything else? Well, let's say, I think it was done by more than one. I'm thinking of the Rolling Stones, Happy. That's one of the few that Keith Richards actually sang lead on. There's a lot of songs have multiple different versions. Like, there's like four songs I can think of, four completely different songs titled Jesse, right? Janice Ian did one. Carly Simon had a Jesse. Somebody else? Yeah, anyway. No, if you ask me Happy, but that's, yeah, you'd probably be thinking of a Happy from a different era. I'd immediately think of the Rolling Stones Happy because it's the era I'm from. Standing up for Milwaukee, this is the Mark Belling Late Afternoon Show. On News Talk 1130 WISN, again, there was an off-duty Milwaukee police officer shot while trying to intervene in a carjacking right in the middle of that big retail district in the Third Ward near Water and Buffalo. I was talking to somebody who said just their sister was at, I won't name the business, but the best-known furniture store down in the Third Ward, right in front of all of it when it happened, broad daylight. I've obtained the name of the officer, and I can tell you it's a male. I'm not going to say anything beyond that. We don't know who's been notified and who has not been notified. In addition to that, there was a high-speed chase that occurred today in Milwaukee. According to Wisconsin Right Now, speeds reached 90 miles per hour on Valete. Car that was stolen a couple of days ago in Menominee Falls was spotted by police officers, fled 90 miles an hour on Valete. I don't know how you go on that pothole-filled street at that speed, but it's unbelievably dangerous. There was a foot pursuit after that. Again, this is in the winter. What do you think it's going to be as the weather starts to warm up? We've made decisions that have created this problem of carjacking, auto theft, and so on, and it's not going to get any better until we start reversing those decisions, beginning with, we have got to come up with a plan to incarcerate everyone arrested for auto theft or carjacking and put them into some type of detention without regard to whether or not they're juveniles. When you've got juveniles that are stealing 10 cars in a 30-day period, that can only happen when we don't lock them up after we catch them the first time. And again, I know liberals don't want to do this. But when they don't want to do something and we do something else, you see here the consequences of these actions. There is only one candidate running for mayor of the city of Milwaukee who's even addressing this, and that's Bob Donovan. And hardly anybody thinks he's going to win. Once again, there are consequences for the actions of doing inane, stupid, liberal things. When you have a community that embraces guys like Frank Nitti running around saying, defund the police, should you be surprised a year and a half later when your city is crime-infested and that crime is spreading out throughout the entire region? And what one of the things that you're going to be hearing more and more of is, as I mentioned in the second story here, cars stolen in the suburbs and then involved in a chase in the city. One of the reasons for that is, generally speaking, there's nicer cars in the suburbs. Secondly, people have a tendency not to lock their cars in the suburbs than they do in the city. Let's move on. You heard in our business report there, the wholesale producer price index for December is in the nines now. Remember, there's a difference between wholesale prices and consumer prices. Wholesale prices is what the manufacturer is charging on their prices. Consumer prices is what the individual pays at their store or the retailer or if it's housing and so on. Consumer prices is what you and I pay. The wholesale price is what the person who we're buying our stuff from is paying. Generally speaking, wholesale prices are ahead of consumer prices. So if the wholesale prices are at 9%, consumer prices may well get to that. Right now, the consumer price index is at 7.4%, shockingly high, and continuing to go up. All of these people on TV keep saying it's going to end in 2022, but if it was going to end, you wouldn't see the wholesale prices continue to go up as well. Now, I'm going to go into two topics that I'm tying together here. I want you to go back about a year. And I want you to find anyone from the Federal Reserve whose model came close to showing these kinds of numbers. Or for that matter, any of the leading Wall Street economists. Who was projecting 6, 7, 8, 9, 10% inflation by January of 2022? We give blind faith to the Fed. The Fed went on this unbelievably reckless dumping of money into the economy during COVID. Remember, the Fed isn't controlled by the Congress, appointed by the president, but they can do what they want. They went out on this massive easing, this massive influx of money into the economy on their own, and they said whatever increase in prices there would be transitory. Furthermore, the models that they cited all called for minimal inflation. There is one takeaway from this, and if I could stick my hand to the radio, grab you by the head, and make you listen to the following sentence, all of you, it would be this. They were wrong! Many of you, but they're experts. Do you understand the larger problem? We have a crisis of expertise. In many fields, the so-called experts are idiots. That can't be. It is. How can they be idiots if they're experts? Well, when the fields are fields in which the experts work for government, nonprofit, or academic, there's a reason why they're often wrong. There's no accountability for failure. Look at Powell. He got reappointed by Biden as head of the Fed, right in the middle of butchering this. You can't take the ideology out of it. Any field in which the experts are mostly liberals, the experts are going to be bad. Again, many of you may not want to hear that. It's just true. You want to know somebody who predicted we would have inflation by the end of the year? Me. Y'all heard me say it forever. I'm no genius on this stuff. How in the world do you think you can take tens of billions of dollars, pump it into the economy in exchange for no productivity, and not think you're going to create problems? Now, clearly, if you had pumped some in to account for the slowdown that would occur with regard to COVID, perhaps that would not have existed. We didn't pump some in. You have many states, including Wisconsin, still paying enhanced unemployment benefits. Is there any surprise that those people are running around spending money even though they don't have to work? It's inflationary. In the meantime, can we all just sit back and finally say aloud that the entire public health community in the United States was dead wrong about every damn thing they said about COVID. Dead wrong about all of it. Wrong about all of it. What good did wearing all of those masks last year do? None. Everybody's running around getting COVID now. What good are the masks that they're telling people to put on now? Yeah. When did they tell us that some of the variants would come around and would be far more virulent than the original? They didn't. They're wrong about everything. Fauci, I'm just asking you to give us a few more weeks and we'll be through this. That was March of 20. Anyone who dared to question, oh, we were fact-checked to death because the expert said something else. We have a crisis of expertise in this country. I have been telling you forever that eventually you're going to get 97 million studies that show that ivermectin worked. Taking vitamin D supplementation helped. And so on. The truth, as I say, always comes out. And as you've seen with regard to the truth that has come out on these things so far, the left simply moves on, goes off in the next direction. But in the meantime, we gave blind faith to experts that were driven by one ideological viewpoint and cut off all debate. And the debate that we cut off happened to be the people who are correct. I mentioned the Dan Henninger column. He actually claims that there's an upside to everybody in the country getting Omicron. That one of the upsides from it is pretty much everybody now realizes that the whole Fauci crowd, all the public health hacks in the United States are full of crap. Full of crap. When are we going to get Dr. Quack from the medical college to come out again and give us another comment on his model? I swear you could go back 2 years of this quackery, read it out of these projections that he said was going to happen. Every single one of them turned out to be wrong. Every single one. But we don't keep scorecards on these people. We simply allow them to run around with their expertise and engage essentially in malpractice of misinformation. No, we cut them the slack because how would anybody know how COVID was going to play out? But they never said, we don't know. They never said, well, this might not work. They never said, like, I could be full of crap. No. They said everything with this absolute certainty, and they made us follow all of their rules. What good was accomplished by closing any school for any length of time anywhere? What good? What good came out of it? All you did was perhaps delay when somebody who was going to get COVID anyway got it. What good came of it? Yet they told us to do it, and we weren't supposed to question it because they're experts. They're experts. Making fun of Paul, who was 3-15. You're now 4-15 now, aren't you? Isn't that your record? What? You don't even know. I guess if I was 4-15, I probably wouldn't know either. I actually don't even know what I am, and I'm doing okay. I was wrong. What are you?
4-15, are you?
What are you? 4-15. Here it is, right on your own thing. You just typed it out yourself. You type this out, don't you? You don't have an intern that types these out. Well, he just typed out his own record. I'm telling you, Paul, at 4-15, you're towering over the public health community. COVID would have to stick around to the year 4739 for them to get four things right. Because the night belongs to Talk 1130 WISN, Mark Felling, late afternoon show. We're on a theme here. The tyranny of so-called experts. I mentioned many times that there are certain fields in which people just think they're in over their head and they're likelier to do whatever certain experts say. There are other fields in which everybody thinks they know more than everybody else. As an example, I've commented forever, the public only rarely condemns or criticizes or disagrees with the actions of the Federal Reserve. Most people just, they have no clue how to deal with monetary policy. No idea about it. They assume that the Fed knows exactly what it's doing. I think public health is another one. I don't know. I don't know about viruses. They must know what they're doing. There are many other areas. If some government official comes up and tells you something, you think that that's a load of crap. You're going to do what it is that you feel like doing. Those two areas, though, people feel as though they're in over their heads. And again, I picked the two fields where the level of expertise is probably the worst. We've had great decisions made over the years by Federal Reserve chiefs and terrible decisions. In terms of public health, I mean, can you find anything in which they have been more consistently wrong over the last 80 years than this one? Today's Wall Street Journal, Daniel Henninger's column. He writes, thank you, President Biden. Your administration has achieved herd immunity. Alas, it has nothing to do with your promise to shut down the virus or vaccinate all 330 million Americans. What you've done has long been thought even more impossible than finding a cure for COVID. You've immunized the American people against politics. Give this man the Nobel Peace Prize. This happy news emerged from a question inside the recent Associated Press poll, which asked, thinking about the problems facing the United States and the world today, which problem would you like the government to work on in the year 2022? Naturally, some 68% said the economy, with the worst inflation since 1982, needed some thought. But astonishingly, the percentage who want the government to work on COVID is 33%. A 20-point drop from a year ago. Now, let me interject. Henninger is pointing out that only 1 in 3 Americans want the government to do anything on COVID. 2 in 3 Americans want no government action on COVID at all. And Henninger's point is, this is a good thing that we finally have gotten to the point realizing that there is zero government role for COVID. Zero. Do nothing. If the government had done nothing from the beginning and allowed individuals to go to their doctors, the private market to work on vaccines, treatments, everything else, I'm telling you, I think we would have been better off, but there's certainly no way we could have been worse. Back to Henninger's column. Partisans, whose job it is to stand in front of a microphone and explain Biden's policies, will say, see, we're winning. Our policies have removed COVID as a daily concern. No. Identified U.S. Omicron infections are arriving at hundreds of thousands a day. Sagas abound of burned out hospital workers and depleted workforces. Holiday air travel was a historic nightmare. The promised supply of rapid antigen tests is today's equivalent of the bridge to nowhere. Cloth masks worked until they didn't. School's out forever. It was remarkable how often one saw people interviewed while standing in lines to be tested to say, I don't understand how this can be happening after 2 years. People are flying the pandemic white flag. They've stopped caring what the government, the politicians, or quote, science, is telling them about COVID. Now, he's right about this. People have now, I think, tuned it out. They've tuned it out. And I think that's a good thing. People like Fauci have been full of crap for 2 years. If it took 2 years for people to figure it out. Again, this identifies what I referred to earlier in the program, the problem that liberals have. When they say these things, eventually we find out if they're right. In some cases, it takes decades. In terms of COVID, it's taken 2 years. But they always end up being wrong. And the fields in which experts and liberals are the same thing are the fields in which there's a guarantee that the experts are going to, you find a field in which almost all the experts are either without political ideology or conservative, you may be able to look to something and find true knowledge. But when they are governed by their political agenda, or in the case of some of these creepy hack public health officers who like to issue orders, let's go back 2 years and think about the idiocy of shutting down the Washington County Fair and some of these other county fairs. Because some creep of a public health officer told them to do so. Completely wrong. It'd stop any pandemic by doing it. Here we are, 2 years after we shut down that. We've had 2 Milwaukee Air and Water shows in a row canceled. 2 years of the July 3rd fireworks not being on. More people have COVID than ever. What? It was going to be worse if we would have had those fireworks? But no, we listened to these quacks, governed by their ideology, confident in their ignorance. Back to the Hettinger column. The COVID pandemic is altering many multiples of behavioral patterns, and one of the biggest for which we should thank the virus is the death of certitude. That's a good line. I've been saying from the beginning, no one knows. We have to try to watch with unbiased eyes and learn. But instead, there's been all this certitude. If you give a do this. And every time we did all of those things, none of the things that they said would happen turned out to have happened. The one time we might actually need a temporary hospital at the state fair is now, but that thing's been closed for 2 years because we built it when we didn't need it at all. Think about that one for a moment. Think about it. Because, again, they were wrong, and they were chasing the dollars associated with getting the contract to build it. Too bad we tore that down. You might be able to throw some people in it right now, right? Think about that. Just think about that. Back to the column. From COVID start in 2020, public and scientific authorities across the world said, trust us, we know what we are doing. We now see that this unshakable public-facing certitude was false. Today, it's fair to say that no one but the hopelessly credulous believe much of anything Biden, Jen Psaki, Anthony Fauci, or Rochelle Walensky says about COVID and Omicron. The list of doubted authorities worldwide could extend the horizon. My purpose is not to discredit public authorities or science. We need both. Public authorities in 2020 cleared the way, cleared the regulatory path for Operation Warp Speed, which let private sector scientists develop protective vaccines. My intention is to reestablish a necessary virtue that looks altogether lost to public life and its scientific representatives. Intellectual modesty. Political leaders try to convey the impression of control over events insofar as most are always on thin ice with the public. With the pandemic, the most visible faces of U.S. authorities across the last 2 years, Donald Trump, Andrew Cuomo, Joe Biden, became caricatures of the in-control public figure. In their world, we were always winning. At the center of this collapse of public confidence sits science, which has a lot to answer for. The problem is not the process of scientific discovery as understood for centuries. The problem is, quote, science, a politicized totem now used routinely to silence legitimate challenge, for example, regarding what happened in Wuhan. Let me interject. Science told us that this didn't come out of the Wuhan lab. So we weren't allowed to question whether or not it came out of the Wuhan lab. So-called science was wrong. Science is never wrong. Just the individuals who claim that they had a monopoly on telling us what the science was wrong. In the same way that we give blind faith to people who, with these absolute statements of what's going to happen because of climate change, they're going to be wrong. They certainly have no more chance of being right than anybody else, but they state it with this absolute certitude, and again, they cut off debate. You know what science actually is? You know what the term the scientific method is? Do you know what the scientific method is? Did they teach you that when you went to Random Lake High School up there or not? You went to UWI. You went to UW Oshkosh. If only you had gone to college. You had a planetarium. Yeah, wasn't that great? The scientific method is you create a hypothesis and you challenge it. And the way you can either prove something or disprove it is literally by challenging it. You put it to the test. Let's suppose I think if I heat water to 212 degrees, it's going to boil. I got to prove that that's what's going to happen. If somebody disagrees, they test it and they try to go to 182 and see if it's going to boil. That's what the scientific method is. Challenging everything, require proof of everything, constantly question. The only way you can find new information is by challenging the current. If we don't challenge the current, we never expand the base of knowledge at all. But that's been shut down. You're thrown off of Twitter for questioning this, that, or the other thing. We can't even tell people about people who have suffered significant problems after getting vaccinated because it might lead them to the wrong conclusion. That's not science. Are people not intellectually curious about the lag time between Steve Stricker's vaccination and when he started developing all of the symptoms that are associated with bad reactions to the vaccine? I don't blame Stricker for not wanting to talk about it. If he dares to suggest that maybe he got vaccinated and then that's when his problems with his heart developed, that he'll be called a quack and a dangerous person. We've cut off all access to information in the name of science, but there's nothing more anti-science than that. So-called science now is the flat earthers who are telling the people that think that the earth is round. No. The science is in on that. You can't come in with your new information. Shut up and go away. Let me conclude Henninger's thoughts here. And again, I think everything that's being said here with regard to the discrediting of the so-called experts on COVID can be said about the discrediting of the economic experts with regard to the inflation that none of them saw coming, despite the fact that we have done the things that have always produced inflation every time we've done them in the past. News Talk, 1130 WISN, Mark Belling, late afternoon show. A little bit after 5 o'clock, we'll give you the 5 o'clock hour word in the cold hard cash contest. I've been sharing with the audience here today's Wall Street Journal column by Daniel Henninger. You can find it at WSJ.com. May or may not be behind the paywall over there. And he's suggesting one of the good things that's happened with regard to COVID is that we are going to require that so-called experts stop being so damn certain with their forecasts and projections, given that they've turned out to be wrong about just about everything. Now, I would argue wrong at a terrible consequence, the number of mistakes we made because we did what they told us to do, the number of health problems that we've created because of the way we reacted to COVID, creating all sorts of other problems, and also the way in which we've just killed off the right to speak out in this country, that the very people who are raising the questions that should have been raised were silenced by being told, you're not factually correct, you can't go on social media, when no one knew what any facts were. In order to know what a fact is, something has to happen and play out. It is not a fact for me to say, let's see, who's playing this weekend? New England is going to beat Buffalo. It may become factual, but it isn't a fact until it happens. It's just an opinion, and it may be based on good information, or it may be based on being all wet. But you can't say what's going to happen with a brand new virus until it happens. You could have an opinion, and it could be informed. But you do not know what will happen. And that's the problem we've had here. We have arrogantly listened to people who have told us what would happen and what we needed to do. They not only were wrong, it was un-American to shut everybody else up. And had we not, maybe we would have found truth a lot earlier than this. Back to the Henninger column. Science triumphalism didn't begin with the National Institutes of Health's Anthony Fauci. Science as a political weapon originated with the battle over climate policy. Now, I've been making this point. There are two sides of every question, and certainly with regard to climate policy, there have been many people who have dissented from the beginning about, do we even have global warming? Then, secondly, will all of these awful consequences occur? Does carbon have anything to do with the greenhouse effect? Does the greenhouse effect create climate change? All of these things. Instead, liberal scientists have used their position and weaponized this to shut everybody else up for the purpose of achieving political goals, again, on something that we don't know what the answer is. We don't know what's going to happen with climate change until it happens. We don't know. All you have in the interim is opinions. But we've silenced and shut up everybody else. And Henninger's point is that's when this started, when people acted not in the name of science, but acted in the name of their ideology. The same has happened to journalism. There are reporters who would rather not break a great story if it made a liberal look terrible. Obviously, the role of the journalist is to break a great story without regard to who it hurts or who it helps. But there are some people more interested in the political take than they are in the journalism, just as some scientists are more interested in the political take than giving us accurate scientific information. And certainly with regard to public health, I think it is fair to say that there are some public health officials that were far more interested in flexing their own power and behaving like goons than they were doing what was actually in the benefit of overall public health. Certainly no public health official would have ever allowed rotten school teachers to walk away from their jobs and abandon children if they were interested in the overall health of those children, which was badly damaged by being kept away from schools. Back to the Hettinger column, and I'll wrap it up now. Disputes among scientists can get famously intense, but at some point in the past decade, the impatient proponents of climate change policy enlisted the media to suppress dissent. Social media companies, whose employees surely self-regard as rigorous STEM graduates, enabled the intellectual silencing. Dissent, which is perhaps the most honorable political tradition in free systems, was demoted into oblivion as misinformation, again, with mass media support. How can we be winning if a significant portion of the U.S. population has come to believe that the representations of science about climate and COVID are mostly, to pick a word, disinformation? Every week, the New England Journal of Medicine publishes the results of clinical studies involving myriad medical problems, including COVID-19. This journal exists because few of the diseases explored in its pages are even solved. The nuances of medical treatment, which is to say science, get debated in subsequent articles and letters. Of its nature, public health is authoritarian, ordering the masses into compliance for some larger social good, such as food handling hygiene. The U.S. Centers for Disease Control and Prevention, now fitfully run by the White House compliant Dr. Walensky, occupies a gray realm between issuing the directives and serving as a scientific clearinghouse. During the pandemic, serious scientists, in and out of public life, have let their status as discoverers of important but ever contingent knowledge be hijacked by the authoritarians of certitude. Omicron has ended their reign. Entering our third year with COVID, the Associated Press results, that's the survey, effectively means some two-thirds of the population is telling its government, thanks for nothing. That is an overstatement, but not by much. And it won't get better until doubt and dissent get more respect than they have now. Today's column, Wall Street Journal, Daniel Henninger. 5 o'clock hour word, cold hard cash contest. $1,000 right now. Here it is. The nationwide keyword this hour in the cold hard cash contest is hope, H-O-P-E, hope. Name somebody with the first name Hope. Can you come up with anybody named Hope? Hope Solo, goofy goalie, right? The soccer team. Hope Lang was an actress back in the 60s and 70s. Got any other hopes? Yeah, it seems like we should be thinking of one. There's not, Hope and Jay. Isn't there like another hope that's really common that we're not thinking of? I don't mean last name Hopes like Bob. I'm first name Hope. What are you going to do? Try to Google that? Get off of Google. I'm just going to throw you off of Google. Just throw you off of it. You would be useless at a bar. I mean, the only thing you'd be good at the bar is drinking. You can probably still handle that. In fact, we should have you do the show drunk someday. You might be, he's all for that. You'd probably be brilliant at the place. All right, let me finish it up. Nationwide keyword in the Cold Hard Cash Contest is hope. People are not going to bore you by giving you hope name answers, aren't they? Yeah. Paul wants to hear those. He really, really would be interested in hearing from you on all of those. Standing up from Milwaukee, this is the Mark Belling Late Afternoon Show. On News Talk 1130 WISN, there was a broad daylight attempt at carjacking in the heart of Milwaukee's prime retail district in the middle of the Third Ward this afternoon, and it ended up with a Milwaukee police officer shot multiple times. Here's what we know so far based on information released just now by a police briefing. The incident occurred around 2 o'clock this afternoon near Water in Buffalo, and that's, as I say, right in the middle of everything. There's the Shake Shack is down there, the big furniture store West Elm is down there, hotel is around the corner, in the middle of everything. As best we can determine, there were children in the car that was the target of the carjackers. An off-duty Milwaukee police officer intervened and was shot multiple times. There was a separate high-speed chase this afternoon along Valete with a car that had been reported stolen a couple of days ago in Menominee Falls. We had a murder occur in Milwaukee at 2:30 this morning on Farwell Avenue near Albion. Still don't know the background of that other than that a 57-year-old woman was shot and killed. These stories are escalating and intensifying, and not all of them involve juveniles, but a lot do. Many of the car thefts and carjackings involve juveniles. Now, people point out all the time that the definition of insanity is doing the same thing over and over and expecting a different result. We are having not just an epidemic, but a pandemic of violent crime fueled by juveniles, often starting with car thefts or carjacking, leading to chases and then often to violence. Yet we have done nothing in any of our communities that I am aware of to address it. Nothing. The current acting mayor of Milwaukee, Cavalier Johnson, says one of his crime platforms will be to maintain the size of the current Milwaukee Police Department force. Not hire more officers, maintain it at the diminished level that it is right now. There's been no statement from the district attorney's office trying to waive more juveniles into adult court. If anything, we seem to be poo-pooing it. In Waukesha County, several weeks ago, you had an elderly woman sexually assaulted in broad daylight outside the Waukesha Library by a juvenile from Milwaukee. The Waukesha police attempted to cover the information up and not let the public know about it for days. The individual involved has not been waived into adult court, will be treated as a juvenile where nothing will happen. Some politicians focus their wrath on Milwaukee County District Attorney John Chisholm. Some of those politicians are from Waukesha County and seem to have no concern at all about the leniency of the criminal justice system and the district attorney's office in their own county. The problem, as you know, is going on all over the place. We talked earlier in the program about science and listening to the experts. Well, true science is looking at what's happened after we've done something and learned from it. Leniency toward juvenile offenders is creating a terrifying situation with regard to reckless driving, car theft, carjacking, and now a police officer intervening. Now, we don't know, and I want to stress, we don't know how this story played out in Water in Buffalo. I don't know whether or not the off-duty police officer was carrying a gun, but it's certainly fair to surmise that if he was intervening, he may well have, and he was the one who was shot. Did the officer have an opportunity to shoot first? Did the officer think twice about shooting first? Because we all know what happens anymore when a police officer shoots a suspect. And the suspect is the one that is wounded. Are police officers not being as proactive? Are they being gun shy? Because they live in communities where politicians and some business leaders are quick to turn on them before all the facts are in. Are police officers slow to react and slow to use force for fear of what will happen to them as to what happened to a police officer in Kenosha who attempted to stop someone from stealing a car with children in it while armed with a weapon having fought off a taser? The Jacob Blake situation, where business leaders like the addled CEO of Kohl's attacked him as a murderer, whereas in fact he was someone who was trying to stop an accused rapist from stealing a car with children involved in it. When you have these kinds of comments being put out by individuals, is it any surprise that police officers may be slow to react to situations in which they clearly could be justified in using force? Again, I don't know if that's what happened in this situation in downtown Milwaukee today. What I do know is that you have a very emboldened class of criminals. Many of them are juveniles. And we have done nothing to respond to it. We have had, for example, not a single public official in Waukesha County, including the sheriff, stand up and demand that the juvenile who sexually assaulted an elderly woman in broad daylight in Waukesha be charged as an adult. Keep sitting by and doing nothing, and this problem will continue to get worse. Now, the current Milwaukee mayoral campaign might be a good opportunity to have this kind of debate and dialogue. The only candidate for mayor who is demanding that we get tough on crime is Bob Johnson. The Milwaukee County Sheriff is running for the office, yet of all the issues that he could be talking about, the one he seems least interested in is crime. The current acting mayor, Cavalier Johnson, is literally living up to his name. He issues position papers like the one today that are cavalier in nature. Then you have Marina Dmitrievic, who wants to cut even more police officers. Her goal is to get the crime rate even higher. As I've been saying throughout the program, things happen because of other things that we've done. Everything that happens in our world is a result of earlier actions that occurred. This particular problem of out-of-control crime, particularly relating to the stealing of cars, the robbery of cars, the taking of cars either by force or without force, is a direct result of policy decisions that we have made that we have chosen not to reverse. Our response to all of this violent crime is to lay a bunch of teddy bears out on the street, rather than address the fact that we have a 3-year backlog at our criminal justice system of individuals facing serious felony charges, free on bail, breaking the law right and left, and juvenile offenders who are allowed to do whatever we want because we're too afraid to send them to the only juvenile incarceration facility Wisconsin has, the one up north. The moment that we heard of bad things happening at Lincoln Hills, we apparently decided the juveniles get to break all of our laws in Wisconsin. I think I just presented you some science. Because here we don't have to wonder about what's going to happen in the future. I'm assessing what's happened in the past. Until we move beyond platitudes over this and start demanding that we become proactive and target the individuals that we know are committing violent crimes because they've already committed other violent crimes, this problem, as I say, will continue to get worse. With regard to all the juveniles out there stealing cars, well, maybe if they had to go to school, if we could get the MPS teachers to get off their sorry, lazy COVID butts and reopen the schools, it would occupy some of their time. But I clearly digress.
Say hello.
News Talk 1130 WISN, Mark Belling, late afternoon show. You want some good news pertaining to Milwaukee? Not all this bad news. You want some good news? This is a story that's just killing the media. I'm telling you, it's killing the media. Milwaukee has made the Final Four for the 2024 Republican National Convention. I mean, when you consider the amount of, when we were on like the Final 50 for the Democratic National Convention in 2020, this past year, 2 years ago, they were going crazy with anticipation. Then we won. And then COVID came and the Democrats didn't show up. Now, the city's made a pitch for the Republican convention and we're in the Final Four. Now, I don't know if we're going to win. Republicans might not want to come to a city where it's not safe to drive your car because you're going to be carjacked. On the other hand, it's not like the crime problem doesn't exist all over the United States. The other cities that are out there, could you name the other four finalists? Well, I asked if you could name them. St. Paul said he could not. I'm guessing that you could have named the four finalists when the Democrat thing was up because they was being covered like crazy. They're just, the media doesn't want this. They just, oh man. City overrun with Republicans after they thought it'd be overrun with Democrats and then they didn't have any. Oh my goodness. Now, these conventions, there's a lot of criteria that are in place. You got to have the right number of hotel rooms in recent times, the political parties have wanted to go to swing states because there's a belief that if you hold your convention in a certain state that you're going to get a bump with positive news coverage and so on. You've got a couple of swing states in here, and then a couple of sites that are from really Republican cities. Pittsburgh, Salt Lake City, Nashville, and Milwaukee. Now, Tennessee is a clearly Republican state, and it's hard to find a state more overwhelmingly Republican than Utah. So you wouldn't get any kind of an advantage from a swing state there. On the other hand, you would have, in both cases of Salt Lake City and Nashville, obviously tremendous cooperation from the local officials and a welcoming environment that would be in place. And in both cities, Salt Lake City, which has a tremendous visitor apparatus because A, the lake, B, the tourism in the winter, but C, also the number of Mormons who come out to Salt Lake City. They have a lot of hotel rooms. They have good convention facilities. Well, Nashville, I mean, it's city that's made its bones off of tourism, so both of them would fit. Pittsburgh has the advantage of coming from the more Republican side of the state. Western Pennsylvania is more Republican than Eastern Pennsylvania, and obviously Pennsylvania is, of the large population, multi-electoral vote swing states, it's right up there with Michigan as being maybe among the two most important out there. So those are the cities plus Milwaukee, and we have made the final four. I have no idea when the Republicans are going to make a final decision on this. I would suspect within the next 6 to 8 months. We're getting closer to 2024 than you might think. We're only 2.5 years away from that convention, and it requires a lot of planning. There have been some Democrats who are hoping that since the Democrats didn't show up in 2020, that they'll come back to Milwaukee in 2024. The Democrats have not put out a final four list of their sites and so on. There's no rule that says the same party couldn't choose the same city. The conventions are a few weeks apart. You literally could have Milwaukee hosting both conventions. I don't know that that's ever happened, and I would think it would be doubtful. Following survey, speaking of presidential politics, is really interesting. Quinnipiac, which is a university in New York State, they're one of the major polling institutes. The thing about Quinnipiac's poll, and I think I pronounced that, is it Quinnipiac or whatever it is? And you got 15 syllables, you don't know which one to put the emphasis on. How would you pronounce it? What I said it three different ways. I'm gonna do it like Omicron, where they have just come out and said you can pronounce it any, you could say, well, and the fact of the matter is that with, you know, it's a Greek word, you can pronounce it any way you want and determine that it's correct, and they've said that all of them are acceptable. This poll has forever leaned left. Their last poll in the presidential election in 2020 showed Biden slaughtering Trump. And obviously it was anything but a slaughter. That's why its recent survey on the job approval rating of Biden is startling. Among adults, the number of voters who are expressing approval of Biden's job performance has dropped in the Quinnipiac poll to 33%. The thing that's stunning about it is that's down 12 points. There were a couple of outlier polls that had Biden in the 30s, but now more and more of them have, and they all seem to be showing a free fall over just the last several weeks. Now, in the presidential years, obviously they're polling almost every day. When you're far away from a presidential election, these surveying companies generally do approval polls every month or every 2 months and so on. So you can get some of these moves like this. But clearly, I think, with seemingly everything going to hell in the United States, all of the statements that were given about COVID being proven wrong, inflation out of control, and Biden's performance when out in public getting worse than ever, that disgraceful performance earlier this week in which he called half the country traitors. Correct me if I'm wrong, I don't know that Trump was ever in any poll as low as 33%. 33% in a country that's half and half between Democrats and Republicans requires a fair number of Democrats to be falling off. Interestingly, from the poll, among independents, his job approval rating is only 25%. Independents are just that, people who sometimes vote for Democrats, sometimes vote for Republicans. So his approval among independents is lower than the population as a whole. Now, that doesn't necessarily mean that absolutely 2022 will be a landslide year for Republicans in the congressional and state elections. And the numbers could reverse. But I want, and, you know, the first 2 years of any president's term are generally when they have their worst approval ratings. Still, this number has got to be startling for Democrats, particularly given, I've got a PS to this story in a minute, stick with me on it, particularly given that this particular poll has a reputation of generally being juiced a little bit to the Democrat side. There are certain polls that some claim are juiced to the Republican side, like Rasmussen. The fact that this is Quinnipiac's poll is, I think, interesting. Also, when Biden went down to Georgia this week and gave his rant, Jim Crow and everything else, did you notice who was not there? Stacey Abrams was not there. Stacey Abrams, who is ran for governor in Georgia and barely lost, she still claims she won, and is running for governor again this year. Georgia may be the ultimate swing state. It's traditionally been Republican. It swung over to the Democratic side. Trump lost it narrowly. Then they won the two United States Senate seats. The Democrats did both narrowly. Stacey Abrams, clearly in a swing state, didn't want to be seen with Joe Biden. And you see these poll numbers as an explanation. If only 25% of independents approve of Biden, and independents are the people who decide elections in swing states, Biden is becoming toxic for other Democrats. One of the tactics that Republican candidates for office have used over the last year or two is they'll run an ad and they'll show some Democratic politician, and then they'll put AOC next to him saying that this candidate has the same positions as AOC. And the candidates say, look, AOC is just a member of Congress. I don't agree. It's one thing to tie a garden variety Democrat to one congresswoman from New York. It's a lot easier to tie that Democrat to the sitting president of the United States. It is not a coincidence that these polls are coming out the same week that we saw the resurfacing of the Clinton crowd. I mean, have you ever seen anything like this? We have not heard from these people in like 2 years. There Doug Schoen was. He wrote his column in the Wall Street Journal. All the shows on CNN and MSNBC. Hillary's ready to go. The time is right for Hillary. The first thing you may have noticed is, have you heard one positive thing about Joe Biden from Hillary Clinton or her people? None. None. She's going to sit back and let this thing fall apart. Furthermore, Hillary and her people, the one thing you could, I'm not saying Hillary herself, but the Clinton crowd shown in all of those, you know, kind of halfway moderate Democrats, they're pretty good at politics. They understand if there's any Democrat in America less popular than Joe Biden, it's Kamala Harris. These stories emerging now at this point in time. The timing is not a coincidence. Let's move to another story. A three-time Olympic gold medalist is now standing up. This issue is beginning to come. This is bound to happen, what's happening here. It's all over the Leah Thomas controversy. Leah Thomas is the biological male who is competing at the University of Pennsylvania on the women's swimming team and is breaking almost all of the NCAA female swimming records. The national championships are coming up, and Leah Thomas is expected to clean house. Ever since we got to the point of saying that gender is something that individuals can simply choose, you don't have to have an operation, you don't have to have hormones, nothing. Your gender is whatever you say that it is. People have been suggesting that what's going to happen to women's sports is going to be a mockery. It hasn't been a mockery yet, because not too many of the people who have changed their gender have been superior athletes. Leah Thomas is changing this. Leah Thomas was a member of the men's swim team at Penn. That's a Division I, you know, it's Ivy League, Division I college athletics. So for an actual Division I athlete in this sport to now compete against women would literally be no different than if a member of the University of Wisconsin men's basketball team, imagine if Johnny Davis decided that he was a she and was going to play on the women's team. That is what you have going on here with Leah Thomas. There has not been much of a pushback from the feminists on this issue of gender yet, because there weren't many cases of superior athletes saying that they were changing their gender. It's just regular old people doing it. But now that literally the swimming record books are in jeopardy, there is a backlash. One of the individuals who is coming out and saying that the NCAA is destroying women's sports is a three-time Olympic gold medalist. I'm trying to get her first name. Her last name is Hogshead. In fact, she now has a hyphenated last name. Hogshead was the name that she competed under. She's now married. Hogshead Maker. I believe her first, let me get it here. Nancy Hogshead Maker. She makes a very, very good point. You need to have been around a little while to remember this. You have to go back to before the Iron Curtain fell. There was a massive scandal in amateur athletics and Olympic sports in the 70s and the early 80s. It involved one nation. In fact, they were thrown out. It was a country in which it came out of nowhere to start dominating the women's competition in the Olympics. You remember this? You know who it was? It was East Germany. The East German team became dominant in swimming and track and field and a number of other sports. And a scandal developed when it came out that a number of the East German female athletes were being treated with male hormones. Zillions of them tested positive for it, and it was a scandal. In other words, you were taking females and you were giving them male hormones in an attempt, male steroid hormones essentially, in an attempt to give them male hormones to improve their athletic performance, and they lost their medals. There were disqualifications. It was a scandal. Hogshead Maker is asking, what's the difference? In that case, we thought it was scandalous that biological women were making themselves man-like. Now, we have actual men! If you're going to claim that giving a woman hormones to make her a little bit masculine is not acceptable, then how can you possibly accept someone who actually is masculine, an actual male, and allow that person to compete against females? Now, that point would seem to be logical. When this is going to come to a head is when it becomes more common. Wait until you see, here in the state of Wisconsin, a really talented boys' high school basketball player compete on the girls' team. The fact that this is involving one swimmer at the University of Pennsylvania and is creating a backlash now, wait until it's not one, when it's five, when it's nine, when it's 15. In the end, there is an inevitable conflict between the gender rights movement and the feminist movement. If feminists are standing up for women, obviously, the greatest threat to women's achievement in many of these areas of competition is if men get to pass themselves off as women simply by claiming, this is how I identify. And finally, our earlier discussion on the subject of science. If ever there was a subject in which the science is in, it is the biology of gender. It's been studied forever. Virtually, not all, but virtually every organism has a gender. Plants have gender. There's a few single-cell organisms that don't. But the whole concept of reproduction scientifically requires gender. There are a few freakish little organisms that are out there in which reproduction occurs without any type of literally sexual activity, any kind of fertilization at all, some. But throughout essentially the entire natural world, we have identified gender. And it is identified on the basis of what is necessary for reproduction. Gender is a scientific fact. Now, when people have surgical operations to change their apparatus, and when they take hormones to introduce into a male body female hormones or vice versa, perhaps you can have an argument. But when you simply have a human being who doesn't do anything physically to change themselves other than to claim, hey, I'm a she, or for that matter, a she claiming I'm a he, you are obviously bucking up against science. You can argue that what you're doing is fine, but you can't claim it's science. So the people who are insisting that we follow the science are nowhere to be found when it comes to individuals who are claiming that their gender is a matter of choice rather than a matter of proven, defined science. News Talk 1130 WISN. Mark Belling, late afternoon show. It's Thursday. It's a little bit past 5:45, but you know what that means. It's time for our weekly football picking contest. With the only games available, the first round of the NFL playoffs, our contest is presented by Holiday Automotive and Fond du Lac Holiday Automotive. It's worth the trip. Unfortunately for the rest of you, you don't get to play because our audience contestant, Mike of Greenfield, he won again. He went into the national championship game, and he said Georgia would beat Alabama by 3 or more. They beat him by 15. Our audience is now 13-5-1 on the year. It's Mike's third correct pick, so he wins another $100 gift card and gets to play along with us this week to indicate how reversed the whole week was in the weird final week of the NFL. Mike Burlett missed his pick. He took the Patriots to beat Miami by 7 or more. Miami won the game. I took the Eagles to stay within 5 points of Dallas. They lost by 25, 51-26. Paul said Tampa Bay would beat Carolina, a team that's fallen apart, by more than 8, and he was right. They beat them 41-17. So our audience actually leads our contest with a record of 13-5. Everyone else is doing well. I'm at 11-6. Mike's at 12-7, and Paul is improving with his win all the way to 4-15. Let's talk to Mike Burlett, an American sports analyst in Madison. Mike, good afternoon.
Hi, Mark.
COVID doesn't seem to be talked about that much in the NFL right now with regard to any impact on the playoffs. I don't know if it's because COVID's run through these teams so quickly that pretty much everybody has already had it, but we haven't heard any rumblings from any teams yet. So does it look like we might be moving past it in terms of an impact for the NFL?
Yeah, it looks like possible. It's possible. I find it kind of weird, to be honest with you. We've heard about it all regular season, pretty much every week, and all of a sudden it's just magically
Well,
gone.
I guess they changed the protocols where they're not testing asymptomatic individuals
Correct.
With everyone else, so that might be a way of reducing the numbers. Anyway, as we roll into the NFL playoffs. I know that ASA has been spectacular over the years in the postseason in pro football. Anything you'd like to share with the audience about what you have this weekend or for the postseason?
Sure. They can get anyone can get our full postseason, all of our picks for $149. It's on the front of our website. 54-32 record in the postseason the last 10 years, so we've done really well. I think there's some really good matchups this weekend, so we'll get off to a good start.
ASAwins.com, 1-888-272-1098. Real quickly before we leave, I've asked you this a little bit. I think Johnny Davis is the best player in college basketball, Badger guard slash forward. You agree with me?
Yeah, he's one of them for sure. He's probably top five. He might be the most valuable player to his team. He's awfully good. He's going to be a lottery pick if he keeps going.
You said lottery pick last week. Mike, he could be the first pick in the draft. He lacks a little bit of height for the NBA, but, I mean, the guy can go to the basket. He can shoot. He's a good ball handler. His defense is very good. And he seems smart. That unbelievably boring Greg Gard offense doesn't look boring with him because he's able to create and use the... I just think the guy's got the whole thing. And right now, college basketball in the state of Wisconsin, between Wisconsin and Marquette, is a lot of fun. In fact, let's see, the Badgers play just coming up in a few moments tonight, and the Bucks play tonight at the Fiserv Forum. They post Golden State with Steph Curry, so big night of basketball. We're talking football, so we'll put Mike on hold here and get going with this weekend's picks. As I said, there are six games to be played, and we'll do the point spreads and people have made the picks, but two on Saturday, three on Sunday, and then one on Monday night. Where are you going, Paul? He's going to the game between New England and Buffalo. Well, I have a strong opinion on that game as well. That game is in Buffalo. The Bills are favored by 4 in that game. That game, by the way, I should mention, is Saturday, and that's the Saturday evening game, 7:15 our time. Paul senses a changing of the guard, and he's going with Buffalo. Well, it'd be a sort of changing of the guard, because that guard kind of changed already last year, but this would reinforce it. It's tricky, because New England started the season not that impressive. In the middle of the year, they looked like they might be the best team in the NFL, but they faded a little bit down the stretch. Let's see if we can get a quick reaction from Mike on the New England-Buffalo game. Paul says Buffalo wins by four or more. Do you have any quick thoughts on that game?
Yeah, Buffalo's a weird team this year. They have six losses, but they led the NFL in point differential, and they led the NFL in yards per play differential. So they have the best stats that we look at going into the playoffs. The crazy part about them is they're 0-5 in one-score games, and all their wins have come by 10 or more. So
yeah, so when they win, they cover, because they win by a ton of points, but they've lost quite a few close games. And it's very hard to go against Bill Belichick in the postseason, obviously, but... and the line does fat, you know, it's 4 points. It's not like one or two. It's a number that they have to get there to get across. Very interesting game. Okay, we'll put Mike on hold right now. We've got our audience contestant, who is also Mike Minkley of Greenfield, who's done a Greenfield or Greendale? Greenfield. All right, Mike, you've done spectacularly well. Give me the game or games you'd like to hear the line on this weekend.
Well, there's only one game I'm interested in, Cincinnati and Las Vegas.
Cincinnati and Las Vegas, that's the other Saturday game. That's the Saturday afternoon game. That game is in Cincinnati. The Bengals at home are favored by 5 over the Raiders, who won probably the best game of the year to get into the playoffs. That wild, unbelievable game Sunday night in which they beat the Chargers, the game in which Brandon Staley ruined his team's chances by calling a timeout when the Raiders are playing for a tie. Anyway, 5 points is the spread in that game. Cincinnati is favored by. What do you think?
Nice. Yeah, I like Cincinnati.
Yeah, so do I. I have to think that the Raiders are tapped out, and Cincinnati finished really strong, and Joe Burrow was playing as good as anybody, with the possible exception of Aaron Rodgers at the end of the season. You also wonder about short week after that emotional Sunday night win with a coaching staff that's still depleted. You have an interim head coach. He doesn't even know if he's going to get the full-time job and so on. I think it's a good situation for Cincinnati. I think you're going to win again. Do you want to give us a reason or two why you like the Bengals?
Yeah, it's the they're both teams are on a hot streak, and arguably the point spread started at 6, it dropped to 5. I think a lot of people are looking at the Raiders as being a hot team as well, but their wins have been very marginal. I think all 4 points or less in the last 4 or 5 weeks. And I just, with Joe Burrow throwing for over 900 yards in his last two starts, I just think they're a team that's way on the upswing.
Yeah, I like your pick. Okay, if you're right, you'll be back with us next Thursday. Mike, any quick thoughts on Las Vegas and Cincinnati? I like the guy's pick.
Yeah, it's a tough spot for Vegas for sure. Like you said, short week, traveling after a big win. There's not, you know, a lot of times we'll look for experienced teams in the playoffs, and this, you got two quarterbacks who've never played in the playoffs. You've got two coaches who never coached in the playoffs, so no big advantage there. I think it's a tough game. I really do. We'll probably pass on it, but not a great situation for Vegas for sure.
Okay, okay. Time to get a pick from Mike. Which game do you want to hear the light on?
Two games, Pittsburgh, Kansas City, and Philadelphia, Tampa Bay.
Yeah, Pittsburgh and Kansas City. That game in Kansas City, that's the Sunday night game. The Chiefs are favored by 12.5. And you asked about Philadelphia and Tampa Bay. That's the noon start game on Sunday. It's the other big point spread game. And that game, Tampa Bay at home, is favored by 8.5.
I'm going to take Tampa Bay.
You're going to take Tampa Bay to win by more than the 8.5-point spread. I mean, Philadelphia looked terrible with the depleted roster when they played Dallas the other night. I honestly thought if anybody else had caught Tampa Bay, they could beat them. And I was hoping New Orleans would get New Orleans. I mean, Sean Payton just, you know, he's got Tom Brady's number. Yeah. And there was a chance that that's the way it was going to shake out. But, I mean, if you're Tampa Bay, they caught the lucky matchup. I agree with you. They're playing probably the most beatable team in the postseason. But you're laying a lot of points. Give us your reasons.
Yeah, I'm not I think Tampa Bay's declined from last year for sure. But this is a great matchup for Tampa Bay and a terrible matchup for Philadelphia. In order to beat Tampa Bay, you need to be able to throw the ball and you need to be able to stop the pass. And they're the direct opposite of that. Philadelphia, not a good passing team, great running team. Problem is Tampa Bay is a really good rush defense. On the flip side, Tampa Bay, 76% of their yards this year have come through the air. That's the most in the NFL. And the Eagles have the worst pass defense when it comes to quarterback completion rate. They give up 70% completion rate to opposing quarterbacks. It's a bad matchup. They met earlier this year. Tampa Bay won 28-22 at Philadelphia, but they were up 28-7 late in that game, and Philadelphia got a couple late touchdowns.
Well, and Philadelphia is in the playoffs because it got to play in a very weak division. With the exception of Dallas, it was a four of their games were against Washington or New York, and the rest of their schedule was pretty soft as well. I mean, I think that they've been an overachieving team, and I don't know. It's just a bad situation for them to play Tampa Bay. And like I say, I think Tampa Bay is primed to be plucked, but it might have to be next week and maybe Green Bay that takes them out.
Yeah, I don't disagree with you. I mean, you got Brady against a quarterback that's never played in the playoffs. Your coach has never played.
But he's played in big games.
Yeah. The Eagles, like you said, they beat one team this year that finished the season with a winning record, and that was New Orleans. They were 1-7 against teams that finished with winning records.
And New Orleans barely had a winning record. That's just
barely. The only thing I don't like about this game is potential bad weather. It's supposed to be windy and rainy.
Oh, in Tampa?
Will hurt Tampa Bay. Yeah.
Well, even in Florida? Oh, wow. That's the one place you would have thought of the games that there wouldn't be a weather issue. I was not aware of that.
Yeah, so that's the only thing I don't like. Otherwise, I'd really like Tampa Bay here, but I still like Tampa Bay to win by more than 8.5.
Okay, there are two games I looked at. I actually really agree with Paul's pick, which you might get two in a row here. I just couldn't pull the two. If it was 3 points instead of four, that's where I would have landed because it was a close call here. But I do agree with him. Buffalo's going to beat New England, and I think Buffalo's going to go to the Super Bowl, and I actually think Buffalo can win the Super Bowl. I think that they might be the best team in the NFL. There is that weird stat that Mike mentioned. When they play a close game, they lose. Otherwise, they're killing teams. That's just weird, but it might be an anomaly. But, Buffalo has maybe the best defense in the NFL and a very good offense. And, boy, you're asking a rookie quarterback to win in a postseason game. That's a big ask there. But I'm going to another game. I think that the most underrated team in the National Football League all year has been who, Paul? Who's the most underrated team in the National Football League? Paul says Tennessee. That's not a bad answer. But they don't play this week. For whatever reason, people do not want to give Dallas any love. Dallas is 13-4 against the spread. 13-4 against the spread. The Cowboys are playing San Francisco. The game is in Dallas. They're favored by only 3. Now, I'll grant you, San Francisco played very well down the stretch. San Francisco might right now be the best team in the West, and the West was a strong division. San Francisco's got a combination of a very good defense and a good enough offense. I'll grant you all of that, but I can't get past the fact that Dallas has looked good all year, even its losses. They lost Arizona a couple of weeks ago. Very, very competitive game. The Dallas offense, between the combination of Prescott and their running game, they're putting up 30 points on everyone every single week. And their defense isn't bad. There's a reason why both their offensive and defensive coordinators are candidates for head coaching positions. I just think that people are having a hard time, maybe because the Cowboys stunk last year. There's, I think, a bias against McCarthy's coaching ability. There's just a lot of things conspiring. They lost to Arizona. Close, though, and remember, Dallas didn't really need many wins down the stretch. They were sailing in there. People are having a hard time just accepting that Dallas is really good, and I think Dallas must be really good because they keep winning, and they win by a lot. So I'm going to take the Cowboys, and the key for me is that it's only the 3 points. If both games were 3, I would have taken Buffalo, but I like 3. I think that there's a chance that I could win and probably push, but I'll take the Cowboys, who I think Dallas and Green Bay are the best two teams in the NFC, and I think Buffalo's probably the best team in the AFC, so I'm going to take the Bills. Any quick thoughts on the Bills and, the Cowboys? The Cowboys and the 49ers?
Yeah, I think both teams are underrated, to be honest with you. San Francisco's better than their record. I mean, San Francisco's one of two teams in the NFL that's in the top 7 in both total offense and total defense.
Imagine if San Francisco was in the East. Maybe they would have beaten Dallas out there, but they're in the West, in which the worst team, Seattle, wasn't bad. Three teams from the West made the playoffs. That proves it.
The West is good, obviously. The problem with San Francisco is they turn the ball over a lot, and Garoppolo's not 100%. And it's a very popular underdog. Lots of people are on San Francisco, and popular underdogs in the NFL usually aren't the greatest sides to play on. So I don't have a great feel on it, but it should be a great game for sure, that one.
I think a lot of points because Dallas is right now, their offense is incapable of being slowed down. Their defense isn't great, I'll give you that. But Dallas's offense is just phenomenal, and whether or not it's because of there's so many Kellens that all of a sudden they're showing up. It's Kellen Moore as their offensive coordinator, and the defensive coordinator's up for a job. The reason all these coordinators are up for jobs is nobody wants to accept that it could possibly be McCarthy that's, you know, turned the team around in their second year. But anyway, Dallas is my pick. So we'll talk to Mike again next week. Talk to you then, Mike. Mike Berlet, American Sports Analyst in Madison, ASAWins.com, 1-888-272-1098. Quickly recapping everyone's picks. I think we could go 4-0 on this program, don't you? I kind of like I do like Paul's pick, which I've been ambivalent on his losses all year. I didn't have a strong opinion on many of them, but I do like Buffalo. Paul says the Bills will beat the New England by more than 4. We all took favorites, too. Mike, our audience contestant, says the Bengals beat Las Vegas by more than 5. I agree with him. Mike Merlette says Tampa Bay beats Philly by 9 or more. I think he's right, but that's mostly a pick against Tampa Bay, a pick against Philadelphia, because I don't think Tampa is one of the top two or three teams this year. And I say Dallas beats the 49ers by more than 3.